This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm David Gale and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by Paul McClure. On tonight's Informer, we'll be chatting with Daniel Santangeli about the upcoming Midsummer Festival, and then with Dr. Clovis Palmer from the Burnett Institute about the effect of HIV drugs on an ageing population. And finally, we'll catch up with Anna Whitelaw, the Festival Director from Gay Times Festival.
For the past three decades, Melbourne has opened the year with a spectacular explosion of colour and culture in the form of the Midsummer Festival, which is a three-week celebration of diversity, resilience and talent from our LGBTIQ plus community, which runs over January and February. In 2017, the festival is celebrating its 30th anniversary, and in celebration, an exciting program has been unveiled with more than 130 events in over 70 venues around Melbourne. Tonight on The Informer, we're speaking with Daniel Santangeli, Programming Manager, about the excitement and diversity that is Midsummer. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What can we expect from next year's Midsummer Festival?
A lot. There are over 130 events as part of the festival. People who are well versed in coming to Midsummer events, they can expect the usual, such as Carnival at Alexandra Gardens, which opens the festival. And then we have Pride March, which punctuates the middle of the festival. And then we also, at the end of the festival, we are introducing a new event on the 4th of February, which is Midsummer Horizon.
And you, I understand, are the co-convener of Horizon.
That's right. I'm curating that event with Alison Bennett, who has been in is a visual artist and been in a few Midsummer events in the past.
Okay. So what's going to be happening at Horizon? What's it about?
Basically, it's an art party.
An art party.
That's right. So one of the things that we're focusing on for this year's festival is celebrating new voices that are and emerging queer voices that are on the rise. And so this event is really focusing on them. And the kind of curatorial question for this event is, what does a queer future look like? And so we're asking artists to respond to that question in some kind of way.
Look, it's quite interesting because Midsummer's always been a bit of an incubator for certain arts. I mean, there are so many things in the festival, and I know Paul and myself and many of our friends, we try to go to as many things as possible. It's a great opportunity to actually go and see so many things within our community, and it is an arts-based festival first up anyway. I mean, most of us focus on Carnival, which, you know, we're always at from Joy 94.9 and also the Pride March. But this sounds like an exciting new event.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, the festival, you know, it has done a fantastic job of supporting some artists' careers. And, you know, we have people like Dina Curry, who is celebrating his 10th year anniversary with the festival. And then we have brand new voices. And one of those events is Hard Queer Death Pony, which is one of our premier events.
Yeah, I saw that as one of your premier events. Actually, Paul and I had the privilege of going to see Hard Queer Death Pony during the Fringe Festival. So, you know, it's sort of a development on from that.
That's right. So Hard Queer Death Pony is presented by dancer and choreographer Chad McLaughlin. And he this show won the Philip Adams Ballet Labs Temperance Hall Award. And so what that award does is it recognises a show at Melbourne Fringe Festival that has great potential and an artist who has great potential, and then puts the resources behind them to give that work a second life. And so that's one of the reasons we're really excited about that event here, is that we get to support its second life as well.
Fantastic. Can you talk about some of the other premier events that are running as part of next year's Midsummer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I should say, with premier events, the idea behind them is that they're intended to be a starting point for audiences. 130 events can be pretty overwhelming.
Sure.
So the idea is that they represent a cross-section of the different kinds of programming that you might be able to expect from Midsummer. One of the events that I'm pretty excited about is the Sparrowmen.
Okay.
The Sparrowmen are an impro comedy duo Marcus Willis and Andy Ballock, and their show was it's entirely improvised. It's a two-man show, and the entire show starts with a suggestion from an audience. Basically, they say to the audience, make a suggestion, and the loudest person will run with that suggestion. Yeah. The version I saw of the show was somebody yelled eggplant, and so the entire show then had to be done around eggplant.
Actually, I might have been at the same show. It was at the Butterfly Club.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've been to it. Oh. Been and seen it. But look, well worth seeing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some amazing things on. Stigma, we've been talking to Darren Visor, yeah, who is the director of Stigma. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Always first here on The Informer, of course. Mm-hmm. The Hellendale Nude Footy Calendar. What can you tell us about that?
I think that's another event that's looking really fantastic. They, again, are early career artists that we're really proud to be supporting. I think they're a really great example of going to the program for not just events that are premier events, but also events that are part of just the broader open access program. That one's at Bluestone Church in the West in Footscray. I would highly recommend that
I've
event.
Actually been to that church for other midsummer events, and it's quite an amazing space as well. You know, most of the shows that you can go and see are like $20-25, and you know, there are so many diverse performances out there that it's well worth it. I can't stay at home and spend less than $25, so going out to see performance for an hour or something like that is a great way to support our community. Tell us, there has been a bit of talk about support of our community, a little bit of controversy with Midsummer.
That's right. I wouldn't use the word controversy. I would just say that we've been getting a lot of feedback about one of our partnerships. So we have I should say that I'm the program manager, so I'm not responsible for our partnerships, and so I'm not the right person to be talking on this. But all I can say is that we've received a lot of criticism around one of the partnerships with News Corp. All I can really say is that we've been listening to that feedback and actually actively listening to it as well. Mm-hmm. So we've gone to a number of community organisations and also out to the Midsummer community and asked for feedback and their thoughts. Mm. And we've also been in conversation with News Corp as well, relaying that that feedback as well.
Well, these festivals don't get put on with no money at all, and I suppose, you know, you could criticise any of the sponsors, but this is a particular partnership that, you know, we'll actually wait and see what sort of response comes back out of that whole thing.
That's right, and Midsummer will be making a statement this week about the outcome of that consultation process.
Will it make any difference to you? Will you still go to Midsummer, Paul?
Absolutely, I will, and with my previous experiences with Midsummer and what they put on as far as the diversity of performances, I mean, you can't go wrong. The program is now out. And for people who are interested, you just need to head to midsummer.org.au and check out this next year's program. And keep in mind that it is the 30th anniversary of Midsummer. It's going to be huge.
It's going to be amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I could say something cheesy, like if you want to get somebody some tickets, it's a good Christmas gift anyway.
Absolutely.
We do have gift certificates that are available on our website as well. So if you don't want, if it's a last minute gift and you just want someone to have a good festival experience, and you know, I would highly recommend that.
News and Current Affairs turns into an advertorial. No, but look, at the same time, we do enjoy going to Midsummer. Get hard copy of the program at lots of venues. Certainly we have them here at Joy as well. And you're only one floor down from us here in Melbourne Central.
You guys do make a lot of noise.
Yeah, fair enough.
We try our best.
Any particular favourites that you're waiting for? I mean, you've mentioned a couple of things. Any tips for Midsummer?
My hot tip would be really to check out our hubs. So we have three hubs as part of the festival. So we have a hub at Art Centre Melbourne.
Yep.
And then we have a hub at Gasworks. And then we also have a hub at the Hare Hole, which is Hares and Hyenas. Three very different kinds of programming there. But I would highly recommend any of them. And there's something for everyone in each of those hubs.
And, of course, we'll have more to say about Midsummer coming up, certainly up to the festival, to the carnival, and also to the Pride March. And, of course, the other event that you've talked about tonight. We won't be talking about Dolly Diamond. She gets enough publicity.
But she is fantastic, so she deserves every bit she gets.
Well, you know, she's throwing herself around the studios all the time, but we won't talk about her. Look, it's great to have you here on The Informer. Thanks very much for coming up, Daniel.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Burnet Institute is an Australian unaligned, not-for-profit, independent organisation that links medical research with practical action, recognising that solutions to many of the major global health problems require comprehensive and innovative public health responses. These include novel discoveries, such as the development of new vaccines and diagnostic tests, and the better use of existing best practice health interventions. Best known on the Informer for its partnership with the Victorian State Government and the Alfred Hospital delivering the PrepX trial. Tonight we're joined by Dr. Clovis Palmer, who currently leads the HIV Immunometabolism Group in the Centre for Biomedical Research. Welcome, Clovis.
Thank you very much, David, for having me.
Look, it's great to have you on The Informer. The Institute has an ambitious new strategic plan for 2017 to 2020 and will drive the Institute's commitment to making an even greater contribution to improving the health of vulnerable communities around the world. Can you tell us a little bit about what that strategic plan is about? What's coming up in 2017? What's so exciting about this new plan?
Yep. So the Institute is going through a very exciting phase, and we are all excited about what's happening. And prior to this strategic plan, we have centers like Center for Virology, Immunology, Center for Population Health, International Health. But what does that mean? It just means that,
yeah, I don't know.
You know, we just stay in our own little lab and we look at virus in one lab. We look at, you know, immune cells in another lab. We study population in another lab. And so we're not actually addressing the key important issues that we want on a, you know, sort of holistic approach. So with this new plan, we have sort of themes. So we have, for example, maternal and child health, disease elimination, behavior and health risk, and health security and healthy aging. So what this means is that it allows different labs to speak to each other, different centers to collaborate and tackle an important issue.
So it's sort of pooling research and also seeing what other people are doing and see where you can help or where you might find other people that can fit in with the research that you're doing as well.
Yeah, so we know, for example, with our disease elimination theme, this includes like malaria and TB. So, for example, you might have a basic laboratory that looks at inflammation marker, for example, and then you have population health that look at, you know, healthy mothers. So those two themes can combine, and a researcher could look at, you know, inflammation in a mother with malaria and then see how that affects the unborn child, for example. So it allows cross-institute collaboration.
So, you know, obviously a mother that has malaria and then her child, the sort of studies that they're doing into that, that sort of research sort of correlates to maybe a mother that's HIV positive and then her child and those sorts of things. So it's coordinating more of background research.
Yep. So, for example, one of the work that we are doing is malaria in pregnancy, for example.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, how does a woman who is infected with, you know, the malaria parasite, mm-hmm. what effect does that have on the unborn? And in, you know, when the child is born, how does that affect the growth and development and long-term future health?
Now, it's funny you should talk about long-term future and health, because the drugs that treat HIV at the moment have been around since around about, what, the 80s into the 90s.
1995.
So now, of course, we have an ageing population that have been on these drugs. Now, before that, we didn't have any research that looked at people that had been suffering with HIV or had the HIV virus present in their system. We didn't have any because everybody died, unfortunately. So now, of course, we've got a completely different set of statistics emerging. This is your branch of research, isn't it?
Yep. So what we now know, for example, in America, we have over 1.3 million people living with HIV, and of those, greater than 50% are over the age of 50. And this is expected to reach 70% by 2030. So what we are seeing in people living with HIV, even though they have, so to speak, undetectable viral load, is this increased prevalence of what you call age-associated inflammatory diseases or comorbidities, so to speak. And this is due to the inflammatory process that still exists in people living with HIV, even though they have undetectable viral load.
Because the virus is continuing to replicate itself.
Yeah. So you have, higher incidence of cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, frailty, dementia in people living with HIV, even though they might have perfectly normal CD4 cell count and of undetectable viral load. So it is important that we find ways to sort of, improve the health and well-being of people who are living longer.
And this inflammation that you talk about, is that inflammation in the joints? Is it inflammation of organs? Or is it, what sort of inflammation?
Yeah, so it's sort of systemic inflammation.
Yeah.
There's also inflammation in the brain because a lot of these medications, they're unable to sort of penetrate into the brain, and we know that HIV also lives and multiplies in the brain, and it is very difficult for the drugs to get in the brain. So this causes a lot of high inflammation in the brain and cause dementia in people living with HIV.
So you're doing research to find out what the long-term effects are in that. What else will come out of that research? Will you look at different ways to address that inflammation and to stop maybe the virus from continually replicating or what?
So we know that one particular type of immune cell called monocytes, they sort of spit out a lot of toxic chemicals. Uh-huh. And what our lab is interested in looking at is ways to stop these immune cells from spitting out these toxic chemicals that cause inflammation. And so what we found, this is, one of our sort of big breakthrough from our lab, is that the immune cells take up a lot of glucose and get energized in order to make all these toxic chemicals. Mm-hmm. So in the lab, we are finding ways to sort of dampen or prevent the immune cells from using too much glucose. And if we can do that, we will limit the amount of toxic chemicals that these cells produce and, help to sort of reduce or prevent inflammation.
Okay, that's pretty amazing stuff. And that's come out of the Burnet Institute the laboratory that you're in charge of.
And it's exciting because some of these methods that we have developed in the lab, we have collaborated with institutes in the United States, like University of California, Johns Hopkins University, University of the West Indies, and Rush University. And we studied longitudinal cohort of women living with HIV.
Yeah, and I was going to talk about that because we've heard about some results coming out of the United States about women living with HIV. Yep. So this is the correlation with them.
Yes. So it's the longitudinal women's interagency HIV studies. Mm-hmm. And what we looked at is some markers that we could use to identify women who are at risk of cardiovascular disease. And we recently published this paper sort of a week ago showing that a marker developed at the Burnet Institute in our lab could predict women who are at risk of developing this cardiovascular disease.
Okay.
So it's exciting times. So we want to sort of build on this result and look at a larger cohort of men living with HIV in Australia and in other countries around the world.
It's also a very exciting time too, because I think everybody, well, I don't know whether everybody has realised, but the new infection rate in New South Wales has just been published.
Yeah,
and it has dramatically dropped. And I mean, people are saying that it is due to the PrEPEX trial that they're having in New South Wales. We have a PrEPEX trial of which the Burnet Institute, in partnership with the Victorian State Government, mm-hmm. and also the Alfred Hospital.
Yep.
The results haven't come in quite yet for that trial, but mm-hmm. this is pretty exciting news.
Yeah, it's amazing news. And as we know, Victoria is one of the few cities in the world that has arrived at the 90-90-90 to be achieved by 2020. So 90% of people living with HIV know the status. At least 90% who are on treatment have suppressed viral load, and 90% who are diagnosed are on treatment. And Victoria has exceeded that mark.
Yeah, so the trial is making a huge difference in New South Wales. We're hoping to see that replicated in Victoria. Also in Queensland as well, where they also have a trial going as well.
Yeah, so those are amazing news. And what's exciting and important with this is that these trials are not going in the rural area, because you know, people would think that this is sort of a sort of rich person's
or a city disease.
But we know that, you know, in rural areas, women as well, it's important to, that, you know, we focus some attention on women as well, who are emerging group.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting time, and it's great to hear about the work that you're doing, also the work that the Burnet Institute is doing in partnership with other research teams, and also with PrepX trial and other things like that. Thank you so much, Dr. Clovis Palmer, for coming in from the Burnet Institute tonight.
Yep, thank you very much for having me.
The Gay Times Festival is almost upon us. It's a country and regional festival now about to enter its second year, and it is being held up in Marysville. Tonight on the line, we have the festival director, Anna Whitelaw. Welcome, Anna.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys.
Look, we had trouble getting you last week, but it's great to have you on the line. When is the Gay Times Festival on?
It's February 17th to 19th next year.
And it's sort of, it's described as Australia's queer music festival. Last year was obviously very successful, otherwise you wouldn't be having it on again. Can you tell us about the lineup this year, or next year in 2017?
Next year. So the lineup is, we've got about 50 acts across live bands, DJs, performers. Our headliners this year are Nairi. And he's an amazing kind of neo-soul singer from Sydney, who's originally Papua New Guinean, and JD Sanson, who is a pretty iconic DJ from New York. But we've got a huge lineup of Melbourne bands and Australian acts as well.
So 50-odd live acts, it says, DJs and performers. So what, you can go there and camp out, or is that how you do this festival?
You do.
I mean, you know, I'm a 56-year-old man.
Literally.
I don't know what's happening. Camping out, glamping out even.
You camp out, you glamp out. It's camp in every sense of the word. So we have everybody camps on site, and we have glamping tents for people who want to pay a little bit extra to get someone to pitch their tent for them. And which is a bit of a kind of luxury option.
There's also, there's a lot of other things that are on offer as well. There's, as I understand, there's yoga, movies, workshops, and even speed dating.
We do. We start the festival off with speed dating, so everybody can get to know each other a little bit better, and which is quite fun. And it's run by the girls who run Fanny's, which is a party in Northcote. And we have all sorts of things. So we have a literal drag race where everyone dresses up in costumes and goes for a run around the around the site. We have bingo. We're going to have trivia. We're going to have live touring. We're going to have dance classes. Last year we had all these activities, and we thought this year we thought that they would be a bit of fun, that people got so into them, they were so popular. We've sort of expanded it. And there's also going to be yoga again, but we'll also be doing some things like some workshops, some sex-positive workshops and that sort of thing as well, and some film screenings.
Fantastic.
Look, it's obviously an all-inclusive festival. I've noticed you've got a little bit of flack, I don't know, certainly online. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we found that when we announced the lineup initially, we got quite a bit of press in music press, and when we announced it on a particular radio station, they posted the story on their website and on Facebook, and we got all of these comments from straight guys mostly, who were sort of commenting, whinging about, why would you need a straight festival? We should have a, you know, we should have a straight festival. Why would you need a queer festival? You know, how discriminatory, that sort of thing. And also just a lot of guys tagging their mate, being like, hey, mate, how funny would it be if you went to this, you know, this kind of low grade
trolling.
You know, trolling, which is a bit disappointing, but it's, you know, it happens. I think they kind of miss the fact that Gay Times is not that different from a gay bar or from Midsummer or Mardi Gras or Tropical Fruits, and that obviously, you don't have to show your gay card at the door. You can come if you're straight. And we welcome, you know, people from all across the rainbow spectrum. So it's not just gay men. We've got lesbians, we've got trans people, we've got non-binary people, and we've got straight people. And that's on the lineup as well as in the crowd. So
it's a little bit like
a cry. It welcomes everyone, but if you behave like a bit of a douche, then it's probably not for you.
It's a little bit like, you know, can we have a straight festival, please? Look, I'm sorry, you already have them. Maybe you should go to those. But at the same time, this isn't an all-inclusive festival, and it just sounds really fantastic. The weather would be great at that time of the year.
An amazing setting.
We hope so.
Yeah.
it is up on a mountain, so we do tell people to pack some warm clothes because it does get a bit chilly at night. But it is a beautiful place, and we were lucky with the weather this year. It was pretty magical, pretty perfect. So hopefully, fingers crossed, February is sunny and warm as well.
Yeah, or else, you know, just rug up with one of your loved ones, I suppose.
Rug up with one of your loved ones. You know, the boys got, a lot of people got dressed up in costumes at night and they didn't seem to be feeling the cold.
Well, there you go. Look, we will add a link to the Gay Times Festival. I know it is still a little while away, you know, Friday 17th of February through to Sunday the 19th, but it's good to plan these things, and it's certainly before the uni year goes back, but, you know, what a great weekend it will be up there. Look, thank you so much, Anna, for finally we were able to get you onto The Informer, and we'll put a link on our podcast, and it's great to hear from you.
And even though it is a while away, the tickets are on second release. So, and because there's only 1,000 capacity for the event, so it's not like like it'll be a massive, massive event. So
it's not like a Meredith Festival or something like that. It's a little bit smaller.
It's a bit smaller, and we do encourage people to get their tickets reasonably early because they do get snapped up.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anna.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.